WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. President Trump's proposed budget would drastically cut all sorts of support programs, including food stamps, by 25%. Here is Trump budget director, once a founding Freedom Caucus member of the House, Mick Mulvaney, at the press briefing on the budget plan last Tuesday.
The folks who are out there who are on food stamps and want to work, we'll be able to work with them to solve the problem. Okay, they are not what's causing the difficulties in SNAP. It's the folks who are on there who don't want to work. And that's what we're trying to point out to people is, look, if there's 44 million people on there, 8 years removed from the end of the recession, maybe it's reasonable to ask if there are folks who are on there who shouldn't be. That is a reasonable question to ask. I would even suggest to you it's a compassionate question to ask.
Compassionate to the taxpayers, but also to the recipients. With me now is Triata Stompas, who is Vice President for Research and Public Affairs at the Food Bank for New York City, which helps people sign up for food stamps and also covers the shortfall in people's ability to afford food by providing food pantries and soup kitchens around the city. Hi, Triata. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for having me.
Can I start with the issue that the budget director, Mick Mulvaney, raised in that clip about work? To a lot of people, that'll sound like a fair deal. Taxpayers will pay for food stamps if you can't find a decent job, but only if you work in the bargain, if you're able-bodied and below retirement age. Does the food bank oppose that?
Well, the framing, I think, that of the statement that you aired is a little bit skewed, to be perfectly honest. It ignores the fact that work requirements have been part of the food stamp program all along, and that what this budget seeks to do is take away and further restrict the flexibility of states to respond to bad economies when there's persistently high unemployment and jobs are unavailable, by easing those requirements.
What are the work requirements presently?
So very broadly, as part of the 1996 welfare reform back in the Clinton administration, there was a 3-month time limit put on benefits for what are called able-bodied adults without dependents. What that really means is people of working age adults between the ages of 18 and 49 who do not have any documented disability and don't have any dependents in their home. The expectation is that unless there is persistent high unemployment where they live, they must maintain employment of at least 20 hours a week. And if they're unemployed for 3 consecutive months, they lose access to benefits completely for 3 years and don't have the opportunity to reapply unless their circumstances change. The only opportunities for waivers for states of this requirement, this time limit, have been where states have been able to show, according to Labor Department standards, that unemployment is persistently high, job opportunities are low, and that an expectation of being able to find work within 3 months is unrealistic, and therefore cutting off food benefits would simply be punitive.
And so states can apply for waivers based on the availability of jobs in the state, so therefore it would be easier to get waivers during times of recession?
Correct. And almost every state in the country during the Great Recession opted to get one of these waivers. You have to remember, during the recession, the average amount of time for a person to find employment was closer to 10 months. So the expectation that a person would be able to be employed within 3 months and therefore protect the resources that were helping them survive with food benefits just wasn't matching the reality.
So in the clip we played of Budget Director Mulvaney, he said if there's 44 million people on there 8 years from the end of the recession, maybe it's reasonable to ask if there are folks who are on there who shouldn't be. And I guess he'd say, especially now that we're down to like 4% unemployment in the country. That is a lot more. Is that a lot more than we're on at the beginning of the Great Recession in 2008? It is, right?
It is. And one of the things that we've seen this recovery characterized by is the replacement of jobs with low-wage work. So some higher-paying jobs have been eliminated. Some professionals who were further on in their careers were never able to find employment again because they were the highest cost employees. And so there has been an entrenched level. You look at the food insecurity numbers, and it tracks very closely to the SNAP participation numbers as a trend. Difficulty affording food in this country has leveled off at a higher level since the end of the recession than it was before. We've not dropped down to the levels that existed before this recession hit.
Listeners, do you work and still qualify for food stamps? Do you not work and think you shouldn't have to in exchange for benefits if you're able-bodied and younger than a senior citizen in today's jobs climate? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Maybe you work for one of the food assistance providers in the area. What are the needs that you're seeing? Or any other question for Trietta Stompas from the Food Bank for New York City, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. The Times published an editorial last week headlined, "The Problem Isn't Food Stamps, It's Poverty." So if you work for minimum wage full time, do you still qualify for food aid?
Chances are yes. Yeah, if there's more than one person in your household, chances are you qualify for food stamps. And that's part of the irony of this is a lot of the cuts that are detailed in the White House budget would actually harm working people. And I think it's important for your listeners to hear, hunger is a thief of opportunity. Hunger takes away people's ability to set their sights any higher than the next day or the day after that if there's not food at home. And so to take away food support from low-income working families that are just barely making ends meet and struggling to put food on their table does not enable anybody to get ahead.
Ralph in Putnam Valley, New York. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Brian. On a slightly tangent topic, I just wanted to shed some light on food pantries and what it's like to go to a food pantry. I work at one on a weekly basis. And I just wanted to – there's always people who look askance at others who are getting something, what they say, for nothing. So I just wanted to people have to realize what it's like on the ground to go to a food pantry, that you aren't met there with people just giving you just incredible amounts of food. You go to our food pantry, you get a number to put around your neck to get in line. After you've waited online in your car for sometimes a half hour, an hour, you put that number around your neck, you get in line, you walk around a room. There are not 40 brands of cereal that you can pick. You cannot get in Frosted Flakes. There is perhaps one choice of cereal on many weeks or none. There's a carton of eggs. You don't get the chance to look at the number on the eggs to see what date it was packaged on. You get a carton of eggs. You get fruit or vegetables that has been gone through that is secondary. It's given to the food pantry after it's not taken by a store, et cetera. You know, you get meat that we used to call rescue meat. It's frozen, and we've decided to not call it rescue meat anymore. That we call it, I forget what they're calling it now in that area. You get bread that's expired or just about to expire.
Rescue meat wouldn't be dead, but that's another show. Anyway, Ralph, go ahead.
Yeah, so you know, you have to make sure that you're getting decent food there. You're not getting any luxury things. So I just find that many people think in this area, food stamps, food pantries, that you're living in luxury for free. And these are people who many of them are well beyond the retirement age, cannot support themselves fully on Social Security or whatever. And when you're on the ground, you can see that this is no walk in the park. Their people are struggling to feed themselves, feed their families, and survive.
Ralph, thank you for painting such a vivid picture. I really appreciate your call. Triata Stampas from the Food Bank. What would you add to that or change? As you know, I have volunteered in the past at a food pantry in Manhattan, and I know that one of the things that they do that the food bank does is to actually try to add some dignity to the experience by making it a little bit more like a store and less like you stand in line for a predetermined bag of groceries that they hand you. So what would you say to Ralph, and what would you say that you're trying to do in that respect at the food bank?
I think that's right, and thank you for bringing that up. We do encourage and we work with food pantries across the city to adopt a model that we call client choice. So setting up their inventory as much as possible like a grocery store, grouping things by food groups and letting people choose based on their household size which items from the food groups when there's a variety available, they want to bring home. So that way they can choose what they know their family will eat. It reduces waste, and it does bring a measure of dignity to what can be a very shameful experience for a person. Nobody really relishes the thought of needing charity or taking charity. I will say, despite our best efforts, food shortages at food pantries and soup kitchens are far more prevalent than we would ever want them to be. In a given month, about half of food pantries and soup kitchens in New York City run out of food. The first thing they'll do when a food shortage looks imminent is they'll start rationing. They'll give each household a little bit less to make sure that everybody gets to walk away with something. And when that doesn't work, they'll turn people away. And about a third of food pantries and soup kitchens in a given month in New York City need to turn people away. And I think that's part of the reason why this White House budget and this conversation is so important, because we have heard this budget talked about as dead on arrival, and I don't want anyone to be lulled into a sense of security or complacency because something, you know, because of marketing. You know, there's, you know, on social media, hashtag Trump budget. The measures in this budget very closely align with measures that have been proposed by the House of Representatives in their budgets under the current leadership for many years. And so calling something Trump budget and saying it's dead on arrival doesn't mean these ideas are dead.
So there's a real risk in the food bank's view that Congress would feel it's done a good job if it ends up with less draconian cuts, but significant cuts nonetheless. That's
correct.
Your real worry.
Correct. Or the cuts or similar, so different versions, but close versions of what's in this White House budget end up repackaged in a congressional budget and, you know, put under a different name, packaged in a different way, and somehow look more reasonable. What we're asking New Yorkers and, you know, everyone who supports us to do is to let our representatives know not just to reject the Trump budget, but to reject any budget that includes measures like these. SNAP really is our first line of defense against hunger. And what we see at food pantries and soup kitchens is the need that exists when those sorts of resources fall short.
Gregory in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gregory.
Hi there. Good morning, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. Listen, I was one of the people who spoke to the city council last year, earlier this year, in regard to food shortages for senior citizens. And I know, personally, that I am ineligible for food stamps, and I go to the soup kitchen, and I go to the pantry on 116th Street, that is run by the Food Bank for New York City. And I spoke very eloquently, I thought, to this issue, because senior citizens are just dumped upon. We have no recourse other than to go, like I do, to have breakfast at the food bank, and have lunch sometimes there. And many people do not understand that, once you've made a certain amount of money, or you're on disability or something like that, just SNAP is not an option. It's just not, we are turned away more often than not. And I just want to put that out there, because it is very important that we speak to the issue of seniors, who are the most in need of food than almost anybody else in this city.
Gregory, thank you very much for your call. And by the same token, I know that there are probably many seniors in New York who would qualify for food stamps, but they don't know it. Seniors who maybe were formerly middle class, mm-hmm. and their pensions are small, if they exist at all, or their Social Security checks are small, and for the first time in their lives, they qualify for food stamps, but they don't know it. How can people find out?
So we have a benefits helpline at our offices, and so you can either go on our website, foodbanknyc.org, to look it up, or the number is 212-894-8060, and you can call up and in 10 minutes talk to a benefits specialist who can complete a screening and let you know whether or not you're eligible based on the income that you have, the number of household members, your other circumstances. For seniors, about 20% of SNAP households across the country are senior households. One of the things that this White House budget would do is eliminate the minimum benefit for SNAP. Right now, benefit levels don't go below $16 a month. The biggest recipients at that minimum benefit level are seniors and people with disabilities. This would drop the floor on them.
Mayor de Blasio even cut close to $5 million in emergency food assistance from his preliminary budget. That's for the next fiscal year that begins July 1st. City Council and he are negotiating details right now. I asked him about it in March when he was on the show, and he seemed to imply that that cut would disappear in City Council negotiations. Do you know if that's happening?
We're still, we're in the final phases of budget negotiations. Now, last week, the City Council had its very last budget hearing on the executive budget. And unfortunately, the executive budget reflected the same funding level for EFAP as the preliminary budget did. And so this is really the window where, if that number is going to budge, it will budge. The City Council has come out with unanimous support, and I've been doing this work inside and outside of government for about 15 years. Unanimous support on any budget item is almost unprecedented. Unanimous support for raising food funding in the city budget for emergency food providers to $22 million from the currently proposed $8.2. In the scope of the city budget, it is a drop in the bucket, but the difference it would make to the food pantries and the soup kitchens, the folks who are on the front lines for people in their moment of need, would be immeasurable.
Triata Stompas with us, Vice President for Research and Public Affairs at the Food Bank for New York City, talking about Trump proposed budget cuts and de Blasio proposed budget cuts. And Christine in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hi. Good morning, Brian. This is an on-point topic. But I want to say this does not just affect senior citizens. I was working in the hospital, and I am a licensed respiratory therapist. I went when I had lost my job and was in arbitration for almost 2 years. I had to go on welfare because my rent was like about $1,000. And in order to get my rent to stabilize, to meet where I was, I didn't even apply for unemployment because I didn't expect for my situation to take that long to resolve. I had to go into welfare, and I had to get SNAP and all of that. I ended up having to take a job below my qualification and had to get food stamps. And I still get food stamps because I still haven't gotten a decent paying job where I don't have to. And these home health aid agencies, all of them, they underpay their workers. I mean, they do pay the wage that is demanded, which is the minimum wage. They do pay the minimum wage. But nobody in New York City can live off a minimum wage. It is unrealistic. So what happened to all the people, all the people who is, I am not retirement age yet, and families who is forced into a situation where you have these low-end, dead-end jobs and have to go out and earn a living. So you're working double and triple work and still not able to make enough money. And these agencies, they make sure they underpay you, so that they don't have to carry the full burden. So they don't carry the full burden, and then they have an alliance with a social service, so that their workers can apply for all the help the government can give. And that's a fact.
Christine.
So it's not just about senior citizens. It's about healthy, vibrant young women and men that are out there working. And the home health care industry is one of the biggest culprits because they do not pay their workers.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Christine, what you're bringing up is really what we see a lot in my organization, which is working people who are not earning enough to give them the resources to put food on the table, especially when you look at the rents in the city, other costs of living in this city, the ability to afford food gets cut into.
That's the issue, because you have these agencies that are out there that are pretending they're giving you real work, and then when you go out to get these jobs, most, if you look in the healthcare industry outside of the hospital, everybody else is struggling. So this is not just about senior citizens,
right,
that is, you know, who is now facing the crisis of high rent because what they was making back in the day is not with the money they're getting. I have friends who are senior citizens, and the rent is going up every year, every 2 years, and the income that they're making they're struggling to keep up, and she do go to a food pantry. But this is affecting all of us of all ages.
Absolutely right, and we've talked about kind of both groups, the retired senior citizens who aren't in the workforce anymore, mm-hmm. and people in the workforce, which is a lot of who the Trump budget wants the burden of the cuts in the food stamp program to fall on. But Christine, on point, as you say, it's legal to pay a poverty wage to a full-time worker in the United States.
Correct.
And so the cutoff for food stamp eligibility is higher than the minimum wage, depending on your family situation. And that's why we have this overlap. So it's, as you say, as Christine says, she's gone, as Christine says, it is a subsidy on employers, mm-hmm. for employers, that the taxpayers are paying for the group that falls into that category.
Yeah, and the double whammy for working households in this White House budget is that there's also a cut to the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit in this budget. So the key tax credits that reward work for low-wage workers and what at tax time can be the single biggest check that the qualifying households receive in the year, also get a cut in this budget of $40 billion. So that will be a double whammy for working households who are earning very little, who need SNAP to afford food, and who right now qualify for the earned income tax credit but might see that qualification reduced or eliminated.
One more call. Craig in Morganville. You're on WNYC. Hi, Craig.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
I am kind of in favor of reducing food stamps for people to try and find work. However, we all know that government programs, the way they're run, that the people who really do need it always fall through the cracks, no matter how well it's run. So in a perfect world, that could work, but it won't. The people who are in dire need of this stuff will always fall through the cracks, and those are the ones that are going to get cut off. And the ones that have been finding ways to buck the system will find another way to buck the system and drain the same amount of money as it was before. So I think you're in a catch-22 situation. Thank you.
Thank you. How much do you agree with his analysis that A, there are, he said, we'll always fall through the cracks. Well, obviously, a lot of people don't fall through the cracks, mm-hmm. but that needy people are falling through the cracks, but also that there's fraud, that are people who don't actually need food stamps who are gaming the system, and that that works to the detriment of people who could be getting them who are not.
You know, I think Craig's not wrong in that, you know, the eligibility requirements could be strengthened. The program could be strengthened. I think there are people in need who are not eligible, like Gregory, who we've heard from a little earlier, who's a senior who ends up at our community kitchen in Harlem for breakfast and lunch because he's not eligible for SNAP. And he is someone who absolutely his life would improve if he had access. So I think we could look at the eligibility requirements and make improvements. I met a woman recently who complained that a very good friend of hers was unemployed for 18 months and never qualified for SNAP in that period. 18 months of unemployment is almost unendurable without the, you know, without any income, and she needed help. And so absolutely there could be improvements. But the error rate in the issuance of benefits in SNAP is under 4%. You take a look at any other government program and show me one that is more efficient and more effective. Now, the diversion rate of benefits to something other than where they're intended to go is at about 1%. So errors can be overpayments, but they can also be underpayments. That error rate is incredibly low, and the actual what gets called fraud is under 1% right now. It is an incredibly efficient and effective program.
Triada Stompas, Vice President for Research and Public Affairs at the Food Bank for New York City. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Brian.